Hey there, this is Matt Ligeti, your favorite comic book Yeti. Did you know that if enough people listen to this podcast, advertisers give us money? Money we can then use to, say, pay our journalists. It's wild. Totally unrelated, we make this podcast using Anchor by Spotify. If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need. All in one place. Even Grant can do it, and he's a grandpa when it comes to technology. Love you, Grant. Let me fill you in on what some of us in the industry call reasons to believe. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and more. And they make it super easy. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. And best of all, Anchor's totally free, which is great when you're, say, a comic book journalism website who lives on donations and boyish charm. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. And hey, I love you.
You are listening to Into the Comics Cave with your host, comic book heartthrob, Grant Stoy.
Hello, fellow humans, and thank you once again for tuning in. I'm Grant Stoy, and with me today is an artist you may know from her work on Spider-Ham. You may know her from Agrisuto, and you may know her from Gumball, and you may know her because she's a hell of a dog mom. Please welcome Shadia Amin. Hello, Shadia.
Hi. How are you doing, Grant?
Oh, I'm awesome. How are you?
Pretty good, actually.
So, Shadia, let's just get right into it. I want to know, where did you grow up?
I actually grew up in Colombia, the country, the one that the Disney movie's based in Encanto from. I grew up in Barranquilla, which is, I think, usually the highlight that will make people know, like, oh, it's the city. It's that both Shakira and Sofia Vergara were born there, and I was born in the same city as them.
Oh my gosh. That's pretty, like, two pretty big pillars to be from there.
Yeah, it's a really nice city. I miss it a lot. But I basically grew my entire, like, childhood there until I turned 18. And after that, I went to Savannah, Georgia to go to SCAD. Mm-hmm. And I was there for like 9 years of my life until like 2019. I basically moved out and I'm living here in the Atlanta area.
Growing up in Colombia, like, how did that affect you?
How do I explain this? My family was very, like, not into the arts.
Really?
Yeah. So they were like, basically a very, like, I had to prove myself. And even then I was met with some resistance. Because they did not see art as a very, like, money giving job. And don't get me wrong, it's hard to make it out as a freelance artist, but they just thought it was very, like, either you're gonna starve unless you become a big artist like Botero, Fernando Botero. If you know the chunky people, that's Fernando Botero, and he's a very famous Colombian artist. So they really did not see that you could make a career in comics until, like, I finally started making a job in comics. Mm-hmm. Basically, it was, like, hard because they would, like, only teach me, like, fine art. And I think back then, I didn't realize that, like, those were bases that I was going to have to learn sooner or later. And also part of it, they were just teaching me to do art in a certain way that even after the basics, they just wanted me to do a certain route that I was, like, not happy with. So the art classes will really bore me. But if I say, hey, there's, like, this, like, little manga class that they're offering, they'll be like, no, we're not doing that. You're learning fine art if you want to learn art. Oh, they just did not like me watching anime.
So was anime your gateway into cartooning style?
Yeah, it was very, like, I want to go to manga and go to Japan and make manga. I was, like, that childhood dream, and especially when we had somebody from SCAD come in and told me, like, oh, yeah, we offer, like, manga electives. I was like, oh, my God, I'm doing this. I think they, unfortunately, they took it out by the time I went in. But like at that point, my influence in comics has changed like so much, and knowing that there's like so much more stuff that is not just like American comics and just manga. And even then, for me, American comics, because it was all that I had access to, was like just a very like adult kind of nitty gritty stuff, like New 52 and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just Watchmen. Oh no, don't get me wrong, like the first like American comic that I bought was Watchmen.
Oh geez.
Yeah, at 12 years
oh,
old.
Oh no.
I mean, I was like, no, wait, not 12. 14 to 16. Sorry, that was like a big gap. I don't know why I said 12. I'm so sorry.
But time travel is hard. Don't worry
about
it.
Time travel is hard. Memories are hard. But my first American comic was Watchmen. But if it doesn't help, my first like actual manga was Ranma and a Half, and they were like boobies galore. And
I don't remember.
And I do remember I got that one at 11. I was like, oh my God, this has so many titties. How did my parents never saw that? I never know. But I would like just, they just let me have one volume. And I will like read it back and forth and like try to copy the artwork. And that's how I kind of self-taught myself.
Right.
And then when I went to SCAD, I was like, there's so many things that I can do. What the hell? And I will like just study Scott Pilgrim. I will study Kara Stoid. I will like basically realize like, oh my God, French comics are a thing. Oh my God, yeah, Tintin and Asterisk. Like I grew up with the TV shows. I was just not aware that these were comics. So knowing that they were comics, and there's like a whole genre of a lot of stuff, like alternative comics, underground comics, the Franco-Belgian comics. I was like, oh my God, I am missing out. So at this point, I'm still like, I feel like I want to figure out what my style is. I have a style, but I still feel like I want to perfect it to just be its own thing and just be like, that is my stuff. Right. The way I draw people is this way.
Mm-hmm.
And not just like feel like I'm trying to copy other people or just like I'm a very slow learner. And I feel like that's because I didn't have the chance to like learn stuff in advance compared to like a lot of younger people or people who had access to all of these mediums.
Mm-hmm.
So trying new stuff can get really frustrating for me sometimes. So I have a hard time figuring out like new stuff a lot of the time.
Well, I'm curious to kind of go back to when you were talking about your family. At what age did you start showing an artistic proclivity? And then your parents were like, no, fine art.
Basically since I was a kid, like I think like when I started like on 9 to 10 years old, I would like draw, and I would like draw Digimon a lot too, because I was like a Digimon kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like try to draw them, and my will like whenever, I don't know if they do this in the US, but like every school quarter, or no, every school semester, they will basically will sit you with a teacher and talk about your grades and stuff like that. And I was like, she draws a lot in class. It's really bad. But the thing is that it was like one of those things that because I was drawing, I was able to pay attention. But whenever you force me to like not draw, I will get bored and not pay attention. I'll make things worse. So it really irritated my parents to the point that I was like only allowed to draw an hour a day.
Oh no.
It was really bad. So I was like, it was a lot. It wasn't until like I had the chance to do a thing called IB, which is the International Baccalaureate, which is like a program that allows you to get better accesses to more international colleges. I failed mine. I don't know why I did it. It was terrible, but I was allowed to do an art one. Basically, I think after that, I had this project where I basically redrew. I just did all the fairy tales. And I said, like, well, fairy tales is the starting point for us as artists to do stuff. And I basically illustrated my own fairy tales and did it like as an art thing. Like, I think my favorite project, and I lost all the pictures of those projects. But basically what I did, and it's really hard to describe it via words. So I basically drew a Rapunzel in a paper towel in a balcony. And I actually managed to get actual doll hair, tape it into the hair of the Rapunzel, and then draw a little paper cutout of the prince. and have her like climbing like a tower that was like attaching to like a stick. And then like my mom bought me like some like decorative like little roses for decoration and just tape it around like the tower so it'll look nicer. And basically that's how I did like my Rapunzel project. And then for like the Alice in Wonderland project, what I did is that I drew all the characters, carefully cut out the entire background, and then I taped the background to a piece of fabric my dad gave me that looked very like psychedelic.
Okay.
And make it look like she was going down it. And then my sister, like my entire family was like, oh my God, this is actually kind of cool. They like all joined forces to help me. So the other thing that they did is that my mom, my sister like taped a bunch of like playing cards to make it look like they were like spilling from the Alice in Wonderland portrait.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was like a lot of fun. And I think after that, like a lot of people saw my work and then my parents were like, okay, I guess we'll let her go to art school. But you need to study business. And I was like, hey, I am not doing that. And I never had to end up doing business. Thankfully. So that's what I was like horrendously stubborn to the point that like I proved my parents wrong.
Isn't that the goal of every kid though?
Yeah. I had somebody actually sit down and talk to my parents and be like, you need to like let her go to art school. Like you're gonna be cutting her wings. My aunt, who basically had that happen, they didn't let her go to art school. She does her own little like crafts, but she's like, no, let her go to art school. You're like doing her so dirty if you don't let her go to art school. So they were like, fine. And then I proved them wrong, like I said.
All right. Now, you went to Savannah College of Art and Design. That is a big deal in the comics community and just like in artistic community all around. What was your time like there?
A lot of like, I think I talked about this in one of the comics that I did. And basically, I just had a huge identity crisis with like my art and who I was as a person. Just because like the thing about Barranquilla that is kind of slowly starting to change is that people don't mind their business. So you have to be a certain way or look a certain way and act a certain way just to be socially accepted. Mm-hmm. And it's not like in the U.S. where I literally saw a guy like this. I came to the U.S. the first time when I was 8, and I saw a guy with bright orange hair, and I was like, "That is so cool! Why didn't you allow that?" And then they were like, "Oh yeah, they allowed that in here. It's the U.S." And I was like, "I'm gonna live here one day," and I did it. But yeah, it was a lot of like discovering who I wanted to be as an artist. And I jumped from like wanting to do comics to wanting to do concept art to wanting to do character art to wanting to do storyboarding back into making comics. And I pretty much said to myself like, well, I'm never going to be able to make it to comics. So I might as well try to find a job in the animation industry. So I moved closer where I could get like a job in animation. And then I got a comic gig and then I got another comic gig. So I was like, well, I'm doing comics forever professionally.
And what was the first comic gig?
It was the web comic that called The Ottoman's Daughter. It's actually still in Hiveworks. I think it's in a hiatus, but I actually had to quit the web comic because grad school got too busy for me.
Oh, no.
It's fine. The creator is like doing his own thing, and I think he's much more happy with what's coming with his own product. But it was like a really good experience, especially because I definitely had artwork done. I actually remember my first year of grad school. I had to basically, what they do is that if you're allowed to continue the program, you need to show how much work you have done. And that includes non-school work, just to make sure like you're not only doing like your school work to fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my teacher told me, you have done the most work. This is horrifying, because I had like work all over like the entire classroom. But not only that, but then I had like two of those like, you know, portfolio folders of 11x17. I have two of them full of Bristol with the web comic that I only did that year
since I started grad school. Wait, did you do that? You did that traditionally? You didn't? Oh my gosh.
And I kind of want to do my next webcomic also by hand, but I'm kind of struggling because I kind of like, it's going to be hard, but it also looks so cool. I really like it. That's like my big, I'm having that crisis now where, like, I want to, like, digital, like, it's not like it's easier, but it definitely lets me have a lot of control over my mistakes because I'm, like, horrendously messy. I smudge all my paper. I am, like, I don't want to say dirty as, like, a non-hygienic, but, like, I smear my paper with pencil, ink, whiteout. It's horrendous. I go back. I regret my choices. And I don't have the accessibility of correcting stuff traditionally as I do digitally. But people say, like, well, you can just, like, redraw it and re-correct it digitally. I'm like, no. You don't understand. If I were to do that, I might as well redraw the whole panel digitally. If I were to do this, the amount of corrections I do traditionally.
Shania, why are you doing that to yourself?
I don't do it. I just draw digitally. That's why I was so, like, I'm fucking myself. I'll do it traditionally. Digitally. And and mad respect. I mean, I'm jealous because, like, there's nothing for me more beautiful to see that, like, the physical ink page.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And whenever I have the chance, I get an actual comic page that I can afford. My favorite comic page that I own is Mark Laszlo's In Love with a Ghost Clown original page. And it's, like, my favorite page in the entire comic. And I got it. And it's, like, one of my prized possessions, that original comic page.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah. I put it down from where I have it hung because the cat kept trying to knock it down. So I don't know where it is now. Oh, no. Thanks, cat.
Shadia, let's say
you
are working on a page.
Oh, no. Actually, the cat took it, tore it down.
Oh, no.
It's out of the frame. Oh, no. Thanks, cat.
Oh, cat, you gonna get it.
Here it is. But look how it is. Sorry, people listening to this.
No, it's not a visual medium, but I'm enjoying it.
Wait, I cannot hear you. Wait. There we go. I accidentally muted myself again. What did you say?
I said, you know, it's not a visual medium, but I'm enjoying looking at that. Oh, my gosh.
It is a beautiful page. So it's like, I love, like, look at this. So he also gave me this original Hellboy with it. Oh, no, wait, I bought it. Actually, he gave me, like, three more sketches that I have, like, hung over there in the wall. Sorry, people listening. I wish you see what I'm seeing. I'll probably, like, what I'm going to do is that when this comes out, I'll go ahead and just show pictures. I'll retweet with the pictures.
That's actually a really cool idea.
These are, like, there's nothing to me more beautiful than see, like, an original page. Yeah. And it just sucks that I know, because of, like, just how messy my own craft is, just having difficulty, like, delivering that, especially because not only that, but, like, I just do a lot of work as it is. Like, I have, like, several gigs, and I have, like, four novels that I have to do. No, five. Jeez, actually. Right. They're all getting timed out. It's not like I'm doing it all at the same time. I'm not.
Oh, thank God.
I am not a masochist. They're all spaced out, but currently I have, like, five novels lined out. I just delivered a little, like, black and white book that's going to come out hopefully soon. So, yeah, I do have a lot of work, and if I were to do that by hand, I'll pour my white walls will be gray. just to put it nicely. If you ever guys seen Eiichiro's Oda's work desk, I'll probably be like that. Like, just Google that because it's insane.
So when you're working, do you have any sort of music or TV in the background?
I watch a lot of... I find that I bore myself with music unless it's, like, music that I have not heard before. But I also don't have the time to be scouting for new music because then I get distracted trying to find a band and then I go through a rabbit hole. So... Weirdly enough, what I like to watch is video essays. It's weird. It's just because it's just like people talking about what they like about a certain movie or why this movie was bad, but I don't like it. But nothing like a haha, I have to read ding back take. I don't like that. It's just more like, well, this is why this movie failed, and to portray the emotions of what had happened, and it basically lets me understand why mediums failed in their execution sometimes.
Yeah.
And I feel like when you do that, you can understand just better storytelling. So, like, I know at a point, for example, they were talking about like a recent like movie musical that was not good. And basically, it's just they were trying to say like, well, this not does not work because of the emotions that they're showing and when they're focusing on the wrong thing, when this should be the focus. And like that makes me understand like, okay, if I were to do this in a story, I know what not to do as a storyteller. And it's not going to be like, oh, well, I have to explain every single detail if people are going to scrutinize my writing. Like, no, I hate that. Sometimes you have to leave stuff to the imagination to work. Or just not question things. But if you're gonna, if I'm gonna watch something just to scrutinize it instead of just seeing why it actually did not work, then I'm not interested when it comes to like visual essays.
Right.
And yeah, no, and I find them like just good mental stimulation in a way. Or sometimes some of mine is like, oh, there's this guy talking about this ARG called the National Flesh Pit, the National Flesh Pit Park.
And it sounds like, horrible. What is it?
It's amazing. It's basically like a very detailed ARG about this like closed national park that it is discovered that it was actually a living creature all along. And what? How because of capitalism, they try to like harness or use parts from inside this animal. But because they like excavated it so much, the animal actually wakes up and causes a lot of destruction, and then it goes back to sleep, and they close the park after that. So basically what you see is like the old advertisement, the old letters, the old calls of like from the discovery to like when the animal wakes up.
Oh, that's wild.
It's so good. And the other one is like, I actually have to watch an analysis of this one because it terrifies me so much. Like, oh, like the video analysis itself made me lose sleep just by showing like the small snippets. It's called the Mandela Catalog. And it's a very horrifying like analog story. All I have to say is like, if you're terrified of the idea of like doppelgangers or people inside your TV or house or very like religious like horror, I super do not recommend watching it because it's like generally horrifying for me. And I haven't even watched the actual videos. I saw an analysis of them.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, no, I sent it to a friend and he's like, you know, it was spooky, but now I'm like with the very what if it happens kind of like fear in the back of your head.
Oh no, I don't need that stuff living in my head.
It's
no,
great stuff, but okay, the Flesh Pit National Park is not terrifying. It's really cool if you want to watch that, but if you want like the good horror, I recommend the Mandela Catalog.
Jody, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's fucked up that Goofy and Pluto live in the same universe, but only one of them gets to wear clothes?
Oh, God. Oh, man. It's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Like, they're both dogs, but one of them it has a collar around his neck and is totally naked.
It kind of makes me think of, like, gargoyles. Where you have, like, the gargoyles that are the actual, like, gargoyles, like Goliath and Hudson. But then have the one that is like the little doggy, and it's like, is that like,
oh, Bronx?
Bronx, yeah. And like, what am I supposed to make of Bronx? Is he like a pet gargoyle or is something?
Oh no, I didn't want to think about that. No. So like Bronx and Pluto, are they just like, do you think they're pets or they're just like the dumb ones?
No, don't say that. Oh my God, that's horrible.
Like, that's kind of fucked up.
It's kind of fucked up.
And the thing about Pluto that messes me up still is, do you remember when he opens his mouth? He has all flat teeth.
Oh, yeah.
Mickey Mouse's dog leads him around. Only has a collar. Totally naked.
Oh, my flat God. Teeth. No! I don't want to. That's horrifying.
See, that opens the door as if, is that Pluto's thing?
Don't say that! Oh, my God. Man, I don't know what to tell you. It's kind of fucked up.
That is You know what?
It's very like, and I think The Amazing World of Gumball, ironically of all things, because I work on it, it's very like, don't think about it too hard kind of situation. So I really don't think about it because like, there's no point. And we're going to get into really bad territory if we think about it. Kind of deal. So I try not to think about it.
Well, Shadi, I got some news for you.
Oh, boy.
We are at the part of the show where I ask you the 5 standard questions that everyone has to answer.
Oh, that's fine. As long as it's not, like, fucked up.
Yeah, with that one was... That's something I'm going to be thinking about late into the night, especially because of Bronx.
Yeah, I wish you hadn't
said that. That makes it really messed up. So, number one, what is your favorite comic book sound effect?
Oh, my God. Kapow.
Kapow?
Kapow. I don't know. It's like the initial impact was not enough. You kind of have to get the sound wave just like kapow.
So
just like you just like extra force on it. It's like it's too strong for like it broke the sound barrier with the pow after the ka of the hit.
And so the ka is going to be like smaller than the pow.
Yes, always for me the pow is like the force of the impact rippling through the target for me. That's why I like the pow.
Oh, that's a good explanation. I like that too. Number two. What is something about sequential art that you love?
I feel like in a way, you have more control of certain parts, like in the pacing. Mm-hmm. And you can show smaller details that are sometimes like more animated mediums cannot show you. I think it's a little bit different now because in the age of streaming, you can like vary the length of episodes. But let's say if I want to show a character's like more soul expressions, and sometimes I feel like I want to show like the really important expressions, I can do that in several comic panels. But not only that, but then sometimes if let's say I was to make a 2-page spread, okay, I don't have to do a whole tracking shot. I can show the entire thing of what's happening all at the same time in one page, in one drawing. I think that's cool. And I feel like sometimes, like, especially with, I think I'm going to quote Hiro Ikaraki from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure in this, and I quoted this before. Comics, especially with black and white, can let your suspension of disbelief in a way that sometimes other comics or other mediums cannot. And he put it as an example, I think, in the second part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. There's this character named Cars, and he basically can manipulate the bones in his body to become blades. And they come out of his arm. But in the comic, he shows it as like a weird amalgam of like flesh and bone.
Oh.
But when it went to be animated, it's just like the bone coming out. And that's it. It didn't look like just like it can be a combination of both. And it's like, it's like the comics medium, especially with how you show it, it can like create a suspension of disbelief that sometimes is not as possible when the medium becomes animated. And not animated as in like 2D animation, but also like 3D and live action. Maybe mm-hmm. what you want to portray is a little bit more limiting, because I feel like that has happened with also like Junji Ito's horror. A lot of people have complained that the moment it becomes to a different, like a more moving medium, it loses a lot of like the grossness and the thing that makes a Junji Ito.
And now kind of on the flip side of that,
mm.
what is something about making comics that you dislike?
How the industry can be sometimes. Just like people and the big companies can be sometimes, just, you know, accepting unions and mm-hmm. recognizing them kind of deals. Or sometimes definitely, it's a lot of stuff. It's definitely like the advantage that certain people have over more marginalized groups. Whether we want to admit it or not, I feel like that's still like people take certain people in a certain position of privilege and do give them, even if it's an unconscious favoritism sometimes in the industry. That can happen a lot, especially with the more, and there's also like the issue with like performativism within the industry too, that I feel like happens like a lot. And also, this is just more like the community itself. Then when it comes to like the industry for me is just a lot of them companies say like, we want to support our artists. But then when you like see, they still go ahead and take advantage of the smaller artists or the newcomers.
Yep.
So like if I were to work on the same industry and I was get paid a certain good, very decent wage, but then finding out that a peer of mine who's a newcomer or just not working at as a big or working like on a different IP or a different property or like something that is just more original get paid like half of the wage for sometimes even more work than what I do.
Yeah.
So that for me is like the issue. And I feel like now that people are being more public about that stuff and just being more outspoken, especially not hiding how many others are getting paid, I feel like that definitely has the chance to change. But not, I think it won't happen unless like the community itself also steps up to the plate out of fear of like their careers being hindering for being honest and truth or just like doing the right thing.
Right. You know, that's definitely true. To bring things up a little bit, mm-hmm. Now what is your favorite curse word that's not actually a curse word?
I actually say this one, and I don't know if it counts as a curse word, but I say god dang it.
God dang it.
God dang it, Bobby. I don't know if I got that from King of the Hills, because fun fact, I actually since I said I lived in not the U.S. for mm-hmm. the longest time, I did not get King of the Hill. I thought this was the most unfunny show ever. And then I finally watched it like after 7 years in the U.S. and I was like, this is the best thing. Oh my God, this is so funny.
What? Oh yeah.
No, I just am like, God dang it all the time.
God dang it, Bobby.
God dang it, Bobby. That boy ain't right. and I don't know. I think God dang it a lot. So yeah, maybe that's like my favorite curse word that is not a curse word, but like there's nothing more satisfying than say like a good old fuck.
Oh yeah. Real curse words are very powerful and yeah. They really help. It's cathartic where you can get it out.
I was joking. I had this concept a while back that I actually want to do, and I actually talked with Jared about it. It's like about cooking. Mm-hmm. And I thought like, maybe I should ask Jared because he also likes talking about food. So I was like, we can do something with this story. And I was telling him how I want all the curses to be like kind of related to food. So I was like, oh, this really fries my pants, or oh, this really curdles my cheese. And I was like, I want to do kind of stupid jokes like that in the comic.
Oh, that would be fun. Oh, and this is it. I got some bad news for you.
Oh, no.
So you were standing at the window of your apartment. Your cat just pushed you right out. You're dead now.
Oh, shit.
I'm so sorry. It was a cat all alone.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised with him.
Now, let's say heaven is real, and you show up at the pearly gates, and you're greeted by the grandfather of comics, Jack Kirby.
Uh-huh.
What do you think he's going to say to you?
You could have used a little bit more Kirby crackle. Because I keep thinking whenever I see my stuff. I did, for school, I did a little, like, a two or three page Static Shock comic. And I was like, oh, man, Kirby Crackle is awesome because I drew, I think I'll have it somewhere. If I find it, I'll definitely show it.
Yeah.
And I drew Static Shock with Kirby Crackle.
How did that go?
And look, my teacher loved it. And I also, like, did, like, a different design for Static where I actually made him look like much younger. And I gave him a very homemade suit. Mm-hmm. And also gave him like a little gap between his teeth that my teacher loved. Like, I think if I find it, I'll definitely show it. And I kind of want to redo it one day just because I really like how that looked. But I basically gave him Kirby Crackle for his powers.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I was like, I should probably do Kirby Crackle more. It looks kind of cool. And I have a few projects that require, like, not required. They're going to have magic in them. So maybe it will be interesting to show it as Kirby Crackle instead of, like, a push, kind of, you know, like a little like blob of smoke or something.
And not to rub salt in your wound, but Eclipse Studio Paint, there are Kirby Crackle brushes.
That's literally what I used when I did the static comic. Like,
yes!
Well, Shadia, thank you so much for joining me for this episode.
No, of course. Like, my lengthy ramblings that you took as like a good podcast material.
This has been a Comic Book Yeti production. You can find new episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts stream. For more information on the Comic Book Yeti, please visit comicbookyeti.com. And for more of Grant, visit grantstoy.com or on Twitter @grantandstuff.